It actually shows you how they spin. You see, what it shows you is that the approval process is complete failure. Because all of Monsanto's products, none of them had actually been tested on the mouse model. And they didn't take genes from closely related species like a pinto bean to a bee to a pea. They took genes from different kingdoms, bacteria and viruses, into plants. And they never tested for this type of allergenicity. So we could be seeing anaphylactic shock deaths and a high rate of increased food allergies as a result of GMOs. Now, the fourth possible problem is that there's more herbicide sprayed on herbicide-tolerant crops. 383 million pounds more herbicide was sprayed in the first 13 years of GMOs as a result of the herbicide-tolerant crops. And that means it's accelerating now because of the herbicide-tolerant weeds, and they're using more harsh chemicals like 2,4-D, which is up over 230% in 2 years. So it's a chemical soup out there, and it's very dangerous. One herbicide-tolerant corn variety, Liberty Link, was tested by industry on chickens, and twice the number of chickens died. But this was an industry-funded study, right? So it was designed so poorly that even a doubling of the death rate was not statistically significant. The fifth possible problem is that genes might transfer into the bacteria living inside us or into our own DNA. And this was a very serious concern among the FDA's own scientists in response to the CalGene Flavor Saver tomato, because it was using an antibiotic-resistant marker gene. And the Division of Anti-Infective Drugs wrote in all capital letters, it would be a serious health hazard to introduce a gene that codes for antibiotic resistance into the intestinal flora of the general population. Can anyone guess why? Antibiotic-resistant diseases. They were concerned that genes would transfer to pathogenic bacteria and result in super diseases untreatable with antibiotics. But the political appointees and the biotech industry said, don't worry, genes are destroyed during digestion. They finally did a study to see if genes were destroyed during digestion in humans. And it was published in 2004. And what's remarkable is it's the only published human feeding study with GMOs. One meal. They took 7 human volunteers, and the volunteers had their lower intestines removed. They had colostomy, not for the study. They had colostomy bags. And they fed them a soy burger and a soy milkshake that was genetically engineered soy. They looked in the colostomy bags and were surprised to find how much intact genetically modified soy genes had survived passage through the stomach and small intestine. But in 3 of the 7 volunteers, living inside their intestinal bacteria before they were fed the meal was the gene from the bacteria from the chemical waste dump near the factory of Monsanto that had been taken and inserted in soybeans to make them Roundup ready, had been eaten by them. The genes had transferred into their gut bacteria along with the promoter, the on switch, and they had Roundup ready gut bacteria. This means that long after we stop eating GMOs, we may still have these genetically engineered proteins produced continuously inside of us. Now, when a biotech representative is in the room, and I don't go into this slide, it's sort of like I provoke them to raise the question, and I love when they do. They say, example, really happened. Mr. Smith is a fearmonger. Because he's trying to say that it's dangerous for us to eat DNA. We've been eating DNA all of our lives. It's in plants, and we're not green. We don't use photosynthesis. If genes were transferred, we'd be green. So this is like a slow softball thrown for me to hit. I say, you know, you're absolutely right. Plant genes don't transfer to gut bacteria. There's natural barriers for transfer, and if they did transfer, they probably wouldn't work. You see, genes are passed constantly back and forth for bacteria. But that's because they're similar. The genetic code is different in the plants. So they wouldn't have that similarity, and they're longer. So the possibility of transfer is extremely low. And if it did transfer, plants and higher organisms have these non-coding portions called introns, where the mechanisms inside the cell remove the introns and then recombine the genetic material to produce a protein. It's a big, complicated process. It doesn't happen in bacteria. The bacterial elves would say, what am I going to do with this? They wouldn't know what to do. And the promoter, the on switch which turns on the gene in plants, doesn't function in bacteria. But in the GM crops, they insert genes from bacteria. So they are similar to the bacterial genes. They don't have introns. They use a promoter from a virus that works in bacteria. In short, the summary is, for those that didn't follow, we've eliminated the natural barriers that normally prevent transfer from the foods we eat, the genes, into the gut bacteria, so that we may be colonizing the gut bacteria of North Americans, which may be responsible for a whole series of problems. And when I mention this to medical conferences, and I speak many times at medical conferences, invariably, doctors either say in the question and answer period or come to me afterwards and say, we've seen a lot of gastrointestinal problems in our practice since GMOs were introduced. Maybe this is the reason. Now, what could transfer? The promoter, the on switch. That can turn on other genes at random. So if it transfers to our gut bacteria, it might turn on a gene there that could be a cancer-causing gene or a toxin or a good gene. The antibiotic-resistant marker gene might cause super diseases. The Roundup Ready gene itself creates a protein that has properties of a known allergen, so we can be continuously triggered by allergies. The Liberty Link gene, it's got some problems. I don't want to go into it. The viral gene used in papaya, zucchini, and crookneck squash may produce viral proteins that help dismantle the defenses against viral infections or be toxic. And what if the BT gene transfers? It might turn our intestinal bacteria into living pesticide factories. So this is a pretty impressive risk. It's one of the 65 risks. Now, let's take a look at a case study of genetically modified soy. Soon after GM soy was introduced to the UK, soy allergies skyrocketed by 50%. In one study comparing GM soy to wild soy, so it's not a great comparison, nonetheless, they found some people reacted to the GM soy, but not to the wild soy. They also looked into the GM soy and found a new allergen that was not in the wild variety. So what could possibly cause an increase in allergens as a result of GM soy? Well, first of all, there's more herbicide residues on the soy, and that might be the problem. There's a known allergen called trypsin inhibitor, which, according to Monsanto's own study, which they tried to hide, it's as much as 7 times higher in their cooked GM soy compared to cooked non-GM soy, an allergen. There's this new allergen that they found in this recent study. And when they fed GM soy to mice, the level of enzymes produced by the pancreas was reduced by as much as 77%. Now, if it takes a longer time to digest proteins, then it gives proteins a longer time to produce allergic reactions. And so eating genetically engineered soy, if it has this problem with us, might cause allergic reactions to a wide variety of foods. In addition, the Roundup Ready protein has properties of a known allergen and may be continuously produced inside our intestines. So these are some reasons why GM soy might be an allergen. But it's also potentially toxic. When it was fed to mice and rabbits, they had changes in virtually every organ that they looked at. And some of the changes suggested toxic insult. Here's a picture of the liver nuclei in mice that were fed GM soy. On the right side is the GM group. Look at the membrane around it. You can see that it's different than the membrane around the one on the left. Within the nuclei is the nucleoli, also showing differences. It's easier to see in this rat study photo, the lower right compared to the lower left. The lower right is the GM soy-fed rat livers. Testicles of rats that were fed genetically modified soy changed from normal pink to blue. I'll let that sink in for a minute. You can see the testicle cells below. You can see the testicle cells below is quite different. When they fed GM soy to mice, this was an Italian study, there was also changes in their testicles, including damage to the young sperm cells. And then they looked at the offspring at the embryo stage of embryos from GM soy-fed parents compared to non-GM soy-fed parents. And the GM soy-fed offspring had changes in the way their DNA functioned. Now, I gave a talk at the EU Parliament, and one of the co-presenters was Irina Ermakova, a senior researcher at the Russian National Academy of Sciences. So she gave me these slides. So these are Russian-speaking rats. And she fed these female rats. They volunteered for a soy experiment. And they were fed genetically modified soy starting 2 weeks before they conceived. More than half of their babies died within 3 weeks. Those that, mothers that were fed non-GM soy only suffered a 10% death rate, so it was a fivefold increase in infant mortality. There was also a difference in the way the offspring looked, especially the size. Those are GM versus non-GM groups. She tried to mate the GM-fed group, and they didn't reproduce. Coincidentally, when the Russian facility started feeding all of their rats GM soy-based rat feed after she did her experiment, within 2 months, the infant mortality skyrocketed to over 55%. This month, I reported in Huffington Post another study in Russia. In this case, they used hamsters. And they fed hamsters for 3 years. And by the 2 years. And by the third generation, most of the hamsters that were fed GM soy were sterile. There was also slower growth, slower onset of sexual maturity, and a fivefold increase in infant mortality, just like the rats. There was also hair growing in the mouths of some of the GM-fed hamsters, which is very rare in hamsters, but it was in larger frequency than these scientists had ever seen among those that were fed GMO. I asked the scientist, have you experienced any pressure? He said, no, no pressure. I asked that because Irina Ermakova, who did the rat study, she told me at the European Parliament that her boss had been pressured by his boss so that she couldn't do any more GM studies. Papers were burned on her desk, samples were stolen, and a colleague tried to comfort her by saying, well, maybe the GM soy will solve the overpopulation problem. Now, if GM crops are so bad, how come we don't see more problems? Well, here's a very sobering lesson. There was a genetically modified L-tryptophan produced in the 1980s that killed 100 Americans about and caused 5 to 10,000 to fall sick. Now, it took 4 years to discover and was almost missed. And the reason it was discovered was because the symptoms were screaming to be seen. The symptoms were new, unique symptoms that stood out. They were acute, so they forced people to go to the hospitals, and they came on quickly. What if all three characteristics were not in place? What if it was cancer or heart disease or autism or obesity or diabetes? No one would check and say, have you been eating? If it was GM soy, no one would check to see if it was tryptophan. It would easily be on the market still. What if it were non-acute symptoms like frequent colds or memory loss? Or memory loss? Maybe it's still on the market. What if it took 20 years to show up? What if it only showed up in the third generation, like the hamster study? So this begs the question, what about the GMOs on the diet, in our diet? Are they causing the doubling of food-related illnesses between 1994 and 2001? Or the fact that multiple chronic illnesses in the United States jumped from 7% to 13% in the first 9 years after GMOs were introduced? Or food-related allergies that doubled in less time? We don't know because there's no post-marketing surveillance, no human clinical trials, not even an evaluation of all the things that change in the GM crop. Approvals are based on assumptions, which are often wrong, and industry research, which is often rigged. I'd like you to rate yourself from 1 to 100 how vigilant you'll be next week at avoiding genetically modified foods in restaurants. And I am offering you help in that regard. Our first draft of our most recent How to Avoid GMOs in Fairfield Restaurants. This was put together by volunteers. Any volunteers here that help with this can stand and receive appreciation? Anyone? All right, well, So it doesn't have all the restaurants in here, and you're welcome to help us collect more data. But I'd like you to rate yourself from 1 to 100, how vigilant you'll be next week or next month, avoiding GMOs when going out to eat. How many people are 1 to 20? 20 to 40? 40 to 60? 60 to 80? 80 to 100? Some change, maybe? Rate yourself from 1 to 100 how vigilant you'll be avoiding GM brands when going out to restaurants, when going out to Hy-Vee and everybody's and all that. And for that, you can all get a non-GMO shopping guide, which lists hundreds of brands and 22 food categories. So how many people are low vigilance, 1 to 20? Anyone? Brave soul, 20 to 40? 40 to 60? 60 to 80? 80 to 100? All right. So now rate yourself from 1 to 100 how active you want to be at educating people to create a tipping point to stop GMOs. How many people are 1 to 20? 20 to 40? 40 to 60? 60 to 80? 80 to 100? All right, I've got some things that I can give you. So what you just saw, this transformation in the room, usually there's more people huddled around 1 to 20 at the beginning, trust me. I talked to 250 doctors in Chicago a few years ago, and I had 30 minutes. And so I did the pre- and post-test 26 minutes apart. And most of them are 1 to 20 to start, and all but one were 80 to 100 to end. I'm just telling you this because it's any group that I talk to, except the biotech industry. If I say 1 to 20, they go like this. I don't know what it is. In fact, I don't believe them, because one former Monsanto scientist told me that his colleagues in Monsanto did the safety studies on bovine growth hormone and refused to drink milk after that, unless it was organic. One guy bought a cow. He also said that they found problems in mice or rats that were fed GM corn, and so they were rigging their writing up so that it didn't show as bad a result. So he wasn't real happy with Monsanto. So I want to share with you information about the tipping point, because if I end now, it's kind of like a real bummer. But I'm going to pump you up a little, and we're going to end actually feeling better about this whole thing than when we started, because there's really good news. And the good news is that we can start looking backwards at what happened already in 1999. In 1999, Arthur Andersen, Monsanto's consultant company, admitted in January in a biotech conference that they had asked their executives at Monsanto to describe your ideal future in 15 to 20 years, and the executive described a world in which 100% of all the seeds, commercial seeds in the world, were genetically engineered and patented. And they actually created a plan to achieve it. And a few speakers later in that same conference, another biotech company predicted that by 2004, 95% of the commercial seeds would be genetically engineered and patented. So they were planning to replace nature. But 3 weeks later, their plans changed because Dr. Arpad Pusztai's gag order was lifted. What happened was, and I write about this in the first page of Seeds of Deception, Susan, Arpad's wife, answered the door and saw a crowd of reporters streaming towards her house with TV news vans. And she said, "Wait a minute, you know we can't speak about what happened. We would be sued." And someone said, "It's okay now. They've released your husband. He can talk to us." So she took the paper, and they all started streaming past her. And she said, "Arpad, come here." So he came over. He read it twice. It was the letterhead of the Rauet Institute. And they had released this gag order. And they looked up, and all what had happened was all these 30 reporters that were now in his living room were at a press conference 20 minutes before at the Rauet Institute, where the director casually mentioned that the restrictions on Pusztai speaking to the press had been lifted. And they were out the door before he finished the sentence. When he started speaking, within a week, 159 column feet of articles were written. One editor said it divided society into two warring blocks. Within a month, 750 articles. 10 weeks after the gag order was lifted, Unilever said, "No more GM ingredients in our European brands." It had become a marketing liability. Within 3 days, virtually every major food company said the same thing. The tipping point happened in less than a week because it was a high-profile food safety scandal. The tipping point we talked about at the beginning was RBGH, low profile. Although the renouncing of RBGH had hit the news, no one's really covering the cancer issue in the mainstream press in the United States. So it's taken a few years. When I was in South Africa, I was interviewed about RBGH, which is legal there, and it hit the press everywhere, and the tabloids picked it up. Cancer in every drop was the headline. And the phone number for the South African Milk Process Association was in the article, and within 3 days, they were calling for the government to withdraw RBGH, and the top two retailers both scrambled for press announcements saying, we don't use it, we don't use it. So high profile is immediate. Low profile can still happen if it spreads through the right channels. And that's what we're seeing in the United States with RBGH. So we are going to create a tipping point. And how do we stop the genetic engineering of the food supply? Well, if we could get it to the general population, if Oprah Winfrey picked us up, we could end GMOs in 60 minutes. So beam her. Another way to reach the general public, or at least our tipping point numbers, is with a film. Now, last year, one of the top Bollywood producers in India, Mahesh Bhatt, whom everyone there knows, produced and narrated a film based on Genetic Roulette, my book. And we released it in February in New Delhi, and then he and the director and an activist friend went to different cities and did a release event. And because of the popularity of Mahesh Bhatt, the film became one of the most talked about films in the country. And it had never been in the theaters, hadn't been on TV, but it was the buzz. They did sell 40,000 DVDs eventually. It did eventually get on TV. But the TV show stations, many of them did 1 to 2 hour specials about the 30-minute documentary. And it really created a stir in public awareness. And it was great to see the emails come across my desk from Ajay Kanchan, who's the director, reporting on what was happening and the changes in galvanizing public opinion against GMOs, which really manifested very soon after when the environment minister decided to put the brakes on the approval of genetically modified eggplant with the Genetic Engineering Approval Committee just rubber stamped. So we said, no, we want to have public consultations and see if it's an appropriate thing. And so the film was used a lot to get the Republic rallied. They had 8,000 people come to their 7 hearings. 100,000 people fasted to stop the eggplant. And in February, the minister said, we're not going to approve the eggplant. So that's very good news. It was BT eggplant. Could have been a disaster. Now, I have to say, I traveled for 2 months, for almost 2 months in India, and I released Genetic Roulette there, and I was hosted by some very important, powerful activist organizations that are doing a terrific job. And there is one of those activists here today, Devi Lakshmi Kutty and her wife, Ramesh Chandran. She works with Tanal in Trivandrum and also in Mumbai. Can we please welcome them to our home? Now, we have identified targeted demographic groups for our campaign for healthier eating in America, and the biggest one is health-conscious shoppers, because they're already making decisions about what they buy based on what they think is healthy. And we know where they eat, in the natural food aisles and the natural food stores. So we are working with the natural food industry. We have big non-GMO education centers that they can put in their stores. We have the shopping guides and the health risk brochures available for free for them. And they're also now gathering around a new third-party verified standard for making non-GMO claims called the Non-GMO Project. And the Non-GMO Project gets products enrolled and then sends the company to an organization called Food Chain. And Food Chain does a third-party verification to make sure that their non-GMO claims stand up to the standard. And Food Chain is a sister company of Genetic ID, and it's based in Fairfield, So they're doing a terrific job to clean out and make sure that the food system, that when they say non-GMO, it really means non-GMO. Has anyone here from Genetic ID or its sister companies? We can thank you very much. So there's already 28 million Americans that buy organic regularly, 54 million that buy it irregularly. And here's our non-GMO education center with books, DVDs, CDs. It says on the top, the slogan of our campaign, which is healthy eating starts with no GMOs, which is what we want people to believe. And then there's the statement, ask for non-GMO products, which is what we want people to do. It's very simple. They're unhealthy, avoid them. We also have retailer campaign kits. So, and they can show free showings of The World According to Monsanto, an incredible video, which when you watch it, it makes you want to break something. And it doesn't give any solutions. It gives no direction. It leaves you there vibrating. So it was a fantastic film. In fact, the filmmaker came to Fairfield, interviewed me, interviewed Steve Drucker, and we're both in the film. And we got our institute, my publishing company got exclusive distribution rights in the U.S. And the first thing we did was make it into an activist package to tell people what to do. So we have a 3-minute video called What We Can Do. And we have an 18-minute video called Your Milk on Drugs, Just Say No, which is all about RBGH. And there's also an audio CD in here called You're Eating What? Actually, no, it's a different one. It's called Don't Put That in Your Mouth. And we've also put a shopping guide and a health risk brochure in here. And so we have these now being shown all around the country by natural food stores and organizations with a whole showing guide as to how to take the energy that it creates and channel it into effective community activism. Now, there's another group. It's parents of young kids, which we reach through school meal programs, because children are most at risk from the potential dangers. So we have lots of parent groups and school groups interested in changing. Religious groups, many of them believe GMO means God move over. So we're getting them information. Health professionals now are starting to line up against GMOs and prescribing non-GMO diets. I spoke to the American Academy of Environmental Medicine for the 4 previous annual conferences. The AEM is right on the front lines of trying to figure out the new diseases and new causes that are causing the diseases in the American public. So they were the first organization to identify Gulf War syndrome, food allergies, chemical sensitivity. And because of my talks, in May of last year, they came out with a policy condemning GMOs, saying all doctors should prescribe non-GMO diets to all patients. And they said, thank you. So many of their doctors give out the shopping guide with the prescription of non-GMO. And I'm now sending out a bundle of 27 articles to organizations to put in blogs and posts and magazine articles. And I suggest that they do it in a lead-up to October, which is Non-GMO Month, founded by the Non-GMO Project, with 10-10-10 as Non-GMO Day. And we're going to create a huge effort to educate consumers about the health dangers to create a tipping point between 10-10-10 and 11-11-11. So we have a year and a month and a day to kick GMOs out. Now, I want to share with you the educational materials and how to use them. We have a Spilling the Beans newsletter. You can sign up for it on the table. Please do. In fact, what I'm going to do is this. I have this new DVD called Everything You Have to Know About Dangerous Genetically Modified Foods. It's basically this presentation to 1,000 people. It says copyright, which in this case means copy, right? So make copies of it. You can also watch it online. And so we're going to give you one in exchange for signing up for Spilling the Beans and a donation of any amount. And a donation of any amount, as much as you can afford. We actually are running into some serious financial difficulties because of the economic crisis, so we've lost some of our major funders. We have 10 people working with the Institute, 3 full-time, 7 part-time, and we are looking to friends now to keep those staff alive. So this is available to you, and please sign up for the newsletter, and you can get this on the table on the way out. Now, we also have Hidden Dangers in Kids' Meals, which is a 28-and-a-half-minute video, which is designed to create the stir, the pot, in terms of parents of young kids and school meals. And so we have that packaged in the trilogy, and that has the audio CD called You're Eating What? Stop Eating Genetically Modified Foods, and please copy this for your friends. That's an audio CD. We have a great video from Europe, but most importantly is The Hidden Dangers in Kids' Meals, which is used for parent presentations. Then we have The World According to Monsanto, which I mentioned. Genetic Roulette. Here's how you work with Genetic Roulette. See, it's intimidating. It's big. If they don't read it, you hit them in the head with it. What you do is you open it up and you say, see, you only have to read the left side and the bullet points and the quote from a scientist, and then you can switch over here. In the meantime, they're trying to read it, right? And then you could switch over here, and you give them just enough time to read it with the headline, then you switch it, but then they take it out of your hand. And when you loan it to them and say, how long do you need to read it? Just take a few, brief time if you're scanning it. When can I pick it up? So they're committing to get it back. So this is like the source book for the campaign, and it's for anyone who's a left brain reader. So this is our left brain book. This is our right brain book. This is for the visual learner. We've got the podcasts online for the iPod owner. We have articles that for the serial reader. So we have all sorts of, we have a fully scripted PowerPoint that you can learn to show. We're starting a lecture training program. So we have all sorts of ways for you to get involved to help create the tipping point. And if you're thinking about getting involved, between now and October would be the best time, because we're going to be really ramping up for October's non-GMO month. Now, I'm going to take questions, and there will also be people at the table right after we break for questions who can give you DVDs and all. But I want to say this, that you'll notice that in this whole talk, I didn't mention the environment, which may be the worst problem, because the self-propagating genetic pollution that we've already put out there in the fields may outlast the effects of global warming and nuclear waste. We have no technology today. We don't have those four distant goggles. We can say, GM crop, kill it. We don't have those in place. So our current technology has no way to completely remedy the situation. And the biotech industry is intending to fulfill its goal to replace nature. They have all these GM crops waiting to be introduced. 50,000 field trials have gone on in the United States alone with between 1 and 200 different species. So we cannot let up our vigilance. And right now is the time when the tipping point has the momentum, because the entire natural food industry is now gathering around the non-GMO project, so they're going to become more bold in their non-GMO claims. And so what does the government do? Their last-ditch effort is to try and eliminate even the possibility of labeling non-GMO. So on May 3rd to May 7th in Quebec, a meeting of CODEX is happening, and the U.S. delegation is coming with a document saying that no one has the right to say GM or non-GM because there's no difference. And if you try and label it non-GM, it's misleading. So this is their last-ditch attempt. This is their attempt to eliminate any semblance of democracy in the food we eat. And this is a desperate attempt, because we are going to hit the tipping point. We are going to turn around. We're not going to let this thing happen in CODEX. And we are going to create a situation where using a GMO will become a marketing liability. And Supermarket News said it very well in December. They said things like trans fats and carbs defined the decade for the food industry, and that GMOs have been hiding below the surface, but they're going to erupt. And if they're comparing it like trans fats and carbs, and they're talking about food companies changing their configurations, their recipes, and they're not going to have a low GMO. Because unlike trans fats or carbs, they also talked about salt and sugar, GMOs give no consumer benefit. You can take the recipe and keep the recipe and get rid of the GMOs by using the non-GMO corn or the non-GMO soy and keeping the corn in the soil. So because of the unique nature of GMOs, when this surfaces, we are going to see a non-GMO tidal wave. And then I can get on to do something else with my life. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. I'll take questions now.
I have a question.
If you are interested in volunteering for our institute, please tell someone at the table outside and give your name and number and email address. We do take volunteers. We have two types of volunteers. We have those with specific skills, like social media networking or graphics or coding websites or things like that, where it's just whatever amount of time you can give us, even transcribing interviews. I've got some really juicy interviews that are waiting to be transcribed. And then we also have people that we can put on staff. If you have a minimum commitment of 15 hours or more per week, then you can take a staff position, have meet with our staff weekly, and participate in all sorts of things. Mm-hmm. And those are available, and we really need that right now because there's so much low-hanging non-GMO fruit. If you have a question, please go to one of the two mics. I'll alternate between the two, and we'll start on the left side here.
Yeah, my question is that if you purchase produce and also packaged food that is labeled organic, are you assured that it's a non-GMO product?
It's a great question. You're never assured. If there's any at-risk ingredients, you are never assured that it's 100% because the pollen doesn't read the sign. And organic has been pretty clean. There is some contamination, especially in the corn and canola. And organic standards do not require testing of GMOs. So the non-GMO project seal, which says non-GMO project verified, will start appearing even on organic products. So it will not only be organic certified, but non-GMO certified as well, which is a higher level of a standard even for organic. But even then, it's not a zero tolerance. There's going to be some allowable level, and it's not a guarantee because we don't have that capacity in production at this point.
Okay, thank you.
Sure.
A question that I've had for years and years, these studies with mice and hamsters and the effects on the animals in India eating BT cotton, 100% of our animals that are grown for food in the United States eat 100% GMO corn and soy. If it was as deadly as it seems in the smaller animals, then it would be an instant tipping point, because if any percentage of the herds are dying, the farmers are not going to feed them GMO feed. Why don't we see problems in the larger animals in terms of all the problems that are seen in the smaller animals?
It's a great question, and we don't know exactly why, but I'll give you some thoughts I have about it. If there were minor problems that weren't fully erupted into acute problems, or they took a longer time to erupt, well, they kill the animals before they live out their lives. They kill them for food. I've been wanting to do a survey among longtime veterinarians of livestock to see if they've seen changes pre and post. Mm-hmm. I know of some unpublished data, which may be published soon, which demonstrates some changes in livestock between GM and non-GM that isn't deadly, but it may be serious. So obviously, for these animals, many of which are rumens, like the cow is a rumen, it's got multiple chambers and stuff. It's not like the same as the human being's digestive system. They survive. Now, people have told me that they gain less weight when they use the GMOs. Somehow it doesn't digest as well. Soon after GMOs were introduced, a guy who used to sell hot peppers to cows to improve their digestion, he was almost out of business. He was flooded with business. We don't know if that's associated. There's also specific pockets of places where there's problems. Like in the Philippines, they were breathing the pollen. Well, we breathe pollen all the time from BT corn. Now, has our community's allergies increased since 1996? Okay. Some people will say yes. I don't know. Huge. But that was a particular cross. And with the instability of GMOs, it may be that that was all gone wild. And it was that seed that caused the problem in the next generation as well. There was a particular 12 cows in Germany. That was a GM crop. They were fed exclusively one variety of the GM corn. That corn is no longer on the market. So it's possible that there is instability in specific characteristics of certain GM crops and not in others versus long-term things that we can't tell in these type of animals.
Thank you. I have another question if you
Let's rotate it.
Yeah. Oh, okay. I was wondering if you'd come across anything to eliminate bacteria that had adopted the genetically modified DNA.
That's the second most asked question. The first is how to avoid GMOs, unless I've talked about that in the lecture. And the third is, have I ever been threatened? No, I haven't been threatened. I don't know. I don't know if we have colonized the gut bacteria of North Americans, and if so, by which genes, and how much, and if it's dangerous, and how to get rid of it. Wow. There is an aspect of science and medicine that deal with gut bacteria. And I've been to many conferences where people are experts at good bacteria versus bad bacteria. But I have never heard of anyone that can say definitively, yes, we have seen the problem, and yes, we fixed it. Mm. You had a second question?
I'm confused about Michelle and Barack Obama, who I considered very intelligent, forward-thinking people, and are definitely foodies, and are definitely interested in organic, and definitely interested in the effects on the environment of organic. Can you explain to me how it's possible that none of this knowledge has reached them, that they would actually, and I don't think he's corrupt, I don't think he can be corrupted by the food industry, that's just what I think. How could he possibly have put Michael Taylor in charge of food safety? And why isn't Michelle Obama informed about the risk to the food supply, which is her main campaign?
You know, it's interesting. When they took over the White House kitchen, it was revealed that the Bush's White House kitchen was all organic. And Laura Bush was adamant. The word was adamant. Dan Glickman was President Clinton's Secretary of Agriculture. And he was a big biotech cheerleader, tried to convince the Europeans that they had to eat it. And before he stepped down at the end of the Clinton years, he was interviewed and he said, what I saw from the probiotic side was the attitude that the technology was good and that it was almost immoral to say that it wasn't good, because it was going to solve the problems of the human race,
right,
and feed the hungry and clothe the naked. And if you're against it, you're Luddites, you're stupid.
Mm-hmm.
And that, frankly, was the side our government was on. You felt like you were almost an alien, disloyal, by trying to present an open-minded view, mm-hmm, end quote. Now, that demonstrates an incredible success of a lobbying/advertising campaign. Mm-hmm. Monsanto spent $6.8 million last year lobbying Washington. And the Lugar-Casey Act, which is for revamping our U.S. food aid, has as its only component, only condition about promoting technologies that the money for foreign aid should also go to promote and invest in genetic engineering of foods. Because the amount of disinformation that has been fed to our leaders is incredible. And I don't really stand a chance against the amount of money that they spend, which is why one reason why we do a consumer campaign. But if anyone knows Michelle Obama or Barack and wants to introduce us, I went the other day to Ottumwa ready to ask the question, well, Mr. President, you promised us in Iowa when you were campaigning that you would require mandatory labeling of GMOs, et cetera, et cetera. And I didn't get called on, unfortunately.
Did Francis, was he able to bring it up to him when he spoke with him?
I don't know.
Because Francis did speak with him.
Ah, too bad. I didn't. Would have liked to have known that.
Yeah.
So, unfortunately, not only Michael Taylor was assigned, but the former governor of Iowa, Tom Vilsack, who was the biotech governor of the year, is the Secretary of Agriculture. We have people from the Gates Foundation, which is pro-GM, the Danforth Foundation, which is pro-GM, the CropLife Trade Group, which is the GM trade group, all taking prominent positions in the Obama administration. So what we have is a worse situation now than we had with Bush because of the personalities that are placed in there. So let's hope that we can get to him and lift the veil on him and also Bill Gates. I'm not going to bet on it. I'm not betting all my eggs in that basket. We'll get rid of it even if he doesn't understand.
And if anybody has contacts with Oprah and Oprah's organization, they should definitely connect with Jeffrey, because if you just network with some friends and family, there's always somebody that's connected in some way.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Jeffrey.
Sure. We're going to wrap up here. One more question, I think.
Actually, I have two, and possibly one comment about that.
what are we going to do about the fact that there isn't a single restaurant outside of Vedic City and campus that is willing to go organic? And also, as far as campus and Vedic City is concerned, unless you have a campus meal card, if you're willing to pay $8 to buy just vegetables, which I'm on basically a fruit and vegetable diet and some tofu.
Right. So, Carol, let me get to your question. Okay.
Yeah.
First of all,
one scoop and for $8, it doesn't work.
Right. So, first of all, I want to say I am really happy with the MUM Food Service for its commitment to organic and non-GMO. I think that is unique in this country, and it's fantastic. I love coming here, and I suggested to our Indian guests to eat here because I can feel comfortable and confident in the food here. I haven't checked the Veganaise yet to see if it's the GM, but I'll do that. As far as the if you read the survey that we did, there's a lot of products in town that have organic. Some are organic year-round, and some are organic seasonally. But this is a non-GMO shopping guide. It's not an organic guide. And, of course, organic is better because you get to have the more nutrition, the less poisons. You promote an entire better system of agriculture for the soil and for the farmer. But we can't say, from the GMO side, if we're going to create a tipping point, we can't say, if you want to avoid GMOs, then the only way to do it is to buy organic. Because that puts no pressure on Kraft to take GMOs out of their conventional varieties. It's got to be for saying, if you want, that people who buy regular food, non-organic, they need to demand non-GMO. That's the leverage point. That's what's going to do it. So as far as your question goes, it's sort of out of my league. Because it's in terms of promoting organic and it's promoting it locally, it's not quite in my area. But I think reading the shopping guide will help you find not only the non-GMO, but there's several that buy or that use organic as well.
Well, the Iowa Source has had some contests on who has the best restaurant food, and so I'm going to suggest to them that they have a contest also on who can have
the
purest food.
Great.
And okay, and then a second. This is a comment. As of tomorrow, there was supposed to be a position from the FDA, it was supposed to be finalized, that all of our vitamins, nutritional supplements, herbs, fruit juice, even water, if it's used to treat dehydration, are going to be labeled as drugs, and therefore they are going to have to prove, they're going to have drug statements and everything. In other words, it will be such a spectacularly expensive, elaborate proof that they have to provide that it will send them out of business. I do not know whether it would destroy Maharishi Vedic agriculture or the campus agriculture. It would, apparently it would destroy buy local, buy fresh, buy local, whatever it is. It would destroy almost everything that we want to eat. So whether it was changed because of public outcry, because it was publicized. They have given another month through, I don't know if it's the end of June, the end of May, or late in May.
Well, Carol, let me cut you off because this is another area that's sort of outside my area.
Yeah.
So what I want to do is I want to wrap up here because people are needing to go. Your point is well taken. There is a codex problem with supplements, and it's a kind of a worldwide thing. And if you Google codex supplements, you can spend all day on your computer and get very angry. But I don't want to go into that right now, if that's okay with you.
And the third thing, the comment about the Obamas and about what the fact that Bush, I was already aware, spiritually.
Well, Carol, is this important? I mean, I'm sensing that it's time to wrap up now.
Okay.
Okay, is that okay? Can I give you a chance to wrap up here?
Okay.
All right, thanks. I'm just seeing a lot of people getting up, and I want to go up and sign books and answer questions personally. Thank you for your comments, Carol. I appreciate it. Thank you so much. So I want to say it's so good to to finally give my full presentation on campus and in Fairfield. And I feel really welcome here. And I think it's particularly important giving it here because our attention tends to resonate and sets up the patterns that are picked up around the world. So it'll be good to celebrate. My next trip around the world, I'm hoping, will be a victory lap. Thank you very much.